The president's top economic advisor is on the way out.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The White House announced late yesterday Larry Summers, the president's top economic advisor, will head back to Harvard at the end of the year. He's the latest administration official to depart after budget director Peter Orszag and top economist Christina Romer. Here's Marketplace's Alisa Roth joining us live. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the president's economic team has taken some criticism. One congressman called for both Larry Summers and Treasury Secretary Geithner to be fired. Did those critiques drive Larry Summers from office?
No. The White House says Summers has been planning to leave for a long time. And that's at least partly true. Summers left his family in Cambridge when he moved to D.C., and he says he has to go back to Harvard by January or he'll lose his tenure there. On the other hand, there is often a big shakeup in administration staff around the halfway mark, which does give the president a chance to make what's called a mid-course correction.
Uh-huh. And so what kind of changes will we see with this mid-course correction?
Well, first of all, there's one correction we probably won't see. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner is expected to stick around. The new budget director and the new White House economists are already in place. The White House is looking for somebody to replace Summers, and word is it'll likely be a woman or somebody who's prominent in business or both. The latter in particular could help counter complaints that Obama's anti-business. Now, it's all speculation at this point, but a couple of names have already been mentioned. One is Laura Tyson, who was a top economic advisor to Clinton. Another is Ursula Burns, who's running Xerox right now.
Okay, Marketplace's Alisa Roth, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
A new Parisian drinking fountain opened this week, dispensing both still and fizzy water. The water is drawn from the public supply, then chilled and injected with bubbles, part of an effort to persuade the French to buy less bottled water, as the BBC's Christian Fraser reports.
La Pétillante. It translates as she who sparkles, and it's the first public water fountain in France to inject carbon dioxide into tap water. The average Frenchman drinks 28 gallons of still or sparkling water every year. The vast majority is sold in plastic or glass bottles, which are then thrown away. Anne Lestrade is from the public water company Eau de Paris. She says the idea behind the fountain is to finally wean the French off the bottle.
It's the first in Paris, but also in France. Eau de Paris is offering a public service by making this available to Parisians. It's an innovation that means Parisians who like sparkling water can drink tap water, but fizzy tap water.
The French are the eighth biggest consumers of bottled water in the world, last year producing more than 262,000 tons of plastic waste. Eau de Paris say their public supply of water is safe and environmentally friendly. And the best bit of all, it's free, even with the fizz. In Paris, I'm the BBC's Christian Fraser for Marketplace.
Hey, free fizz. Let's do the numbers. Not sparkling today. Markets are down after the Federal Reserve expressed some concern about deflation and a feeble economy. And this morning, the Mortgage Bankers Association said demand for home loans fell again last week. Even those low, low mortgage rates are not enough to entice more people to borrow. Wall Street stocks were generally lower yesterday, although the Dow Industrials did nudge up 7 points to 10,761.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact Event Marketing, working to help small businesses and nonprofits make their events easier with event registration and marketing tools. ConstantContact.com. By Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio. And by the new Rosetta Stone, introducing their latest advancement in language learning, version 4 Totali. Information at rosettastone.com/APM.
Companies are catching on to social media as a way to market themselves. Ah, but beware the risk of online PR disaster. From WLRN in Miami, Kenny Malone tells us one approach companies can take should Facebook turn unfriendly.
2 weeks ago, AT&T sent a special message to nearly 10 million of its customers. Thanks for choosing us. We already cover 97% of America. And then the company went on to announce billions of dollars in network upgrades without addressing some common complaints about dropped calls and coverage gaps. At the end, the email invited customers to post comments on the company's Facebook wall. Thousands did, mostly negative. And so we present AT&T's Facebook wall, a dramatic reading by Gable stage actors Greg Wiener and Aaron Joy Schmidt.
Service in Alabama sucks.
iPhone sucks.
AT&T sucks.
OMG! I really hate dealing with AT&T.
Seriously, though? You.
The effort is what it is. It's basically emphatic response.
Chris Baucus oversees AT&T's Facebook response team. They have more than 24 people dedicated to social media, but they don't take down angry posts. They respond to them rationally and kindly.
People don't really expect a response when they do leave some obscene kind of comment like that. But you want to see why that person really said what they said.
In the hours after AT&T sent their special message, Facebook posts jumped fivefold. You can look back and still see AT&T responding as late as 4 a.m. that night. And that's one approach. Some companies like BP remove vulgarity. Others like McDonald's and Disney limit a user's privilege to post. But those consumers...
They're commenting anyways.
Says marketing consultant Bruce Turkell.
If you don't provide them with the wall in this case or any other opportunity, do you think therefore they're going to be quiet? People are going to get their message out, whether they spray paint it on a wall, a real wall, or they type it onto a Facebook wall.
Turkell says AT&T is doing exactly what they should be, intervening instead of trying to interrupt.
What are you going to do? Sue somebody? Put out a cease and desist? By the time the message has been picked up in the viral space and repeated, it's out of your hands. It's out of your control.
Turkell says social media marks the end of an era for companies, an era when controlling the message was even an option. In Miami, I'm Kenny Malone for Marketplace.
And speaking of suing somebody, here's a quick way to raise $10,000. Testify to the Boulder, Colorado City Council in your boxers. A Boulder man protested a city proposal to criminalize nudity by addressing the council in his underwear. He was handcuffed and arrested. He sued Boulder for violating his civil rights. And voila, city pays him $10,000. He's offered to buy boxers for any council members who will attend their meeting without pants. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.